How healthy is your business? Is your business plan helping your bottom line? Do you even have a business plan? Barbara Haggerty of Mind Your Own Business has over 25 years of helping businesses of all kinds and sizes to get them where their owners want them to go. She uses her special wellness check process. It's to assess where your business is now, and then uses her own unique 7-steps business excellence plan to expand and grow your business into something to be proud of. Barbara will take a holistic or a global appreciation view of your company, and that's absolutely going to make a difference to your bottom line. So call now and schedule a wellness check and watch your business grow. 602-750-4518. That's Barbara Haggerty of Mind Your Own Business. 602-750-4518. At Beer and Bomb and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Beer and Bomb and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Ridenour, Hyten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Hyten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Hello, this is Michael Dixon. Internationally acclaimed Metropolitan Opera baritone Dmitri Varostovsky will perform a one-time-only opera gala concert with the Phoenix Opera Orchestra and Chorus Tuesday, January 10th at the Orpheum Theater. We've seen the sensational singer in the Met's live HD broadcasts. Now hear him live in concert January 10th. It'll be the musical event of the season. Get tickets now at the Orpheum box office and at phoenixopera.org.
Hi, I'm Paul, and I'm on the spectrum.
And I'm Kim, and I'm an autism specialist.
The second Monday and Tuesday of each month at 3 p.m. on 1010 a.m.
and online at breakradioshow.com, live and archived.
We're here to help you with
Understanding Autism.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. And again, thank you to The Bottom Line starring Mitch Spean that just departed. They were on from 2 to 3. That sounded pretty bad. Departed. Eric, what does that sound like?
What happened when departed while they were here?
They left because now the Green Roundtable is here starring Eric Koss and Frank Clemente. Guys, it's always nice seeing you guys. I just love this show. I'm Green Roundtable. It's cutting edge.
Nice to see you, Dave.
Thank you.
It's cutting edge. We're here. We're all in the holiday spirit, I think. So
yeah. Wow. Did you both have a good Thanksgiving?
Yes.
Yes. Yes, we did.
Wow. That's pretty good. And then now other holidays are coming up.
That's right.
Oh, you don't
good
look
observation,
so
Dave.
You don't look so excited. Come on. New Year's Eve. You're going to be dancing. No?
That's right. Well, this year we're going to have our top 10 green New Year's resolutions for our January show.
Excellent.
So we need to make sure everybody listens for that.
Oh, that would be good. That would be January 3rd, I believe.
Yes.
That's a good time.
Tuesday, January 3rd.
Yeah, because the 1st, I believe, is a Sunday. Yeah, 3rd would be Tuesday. Nice. I like that. I'm looking forward to that. Anyway, so a little quick background, 30-second, Eric.
Well, my name is Eric Koss, and I'm the owner of Koss Design and Koss Design and Build. We're an architecture and construction company, and we focus mostly on sustainable building in the residential and specialty commercial market.
Excellent. And Mr. Frank Clemente.
My background is architecture, and I do architectural landscape design, which is all sustainable for residential and commercial projects.
You know what came to mind? You know, and you guys never, you cringe when
Did
I say
something
that.
Come to your mind, Dave?
Yeah, that was a good one. Wow, he got the best of me on that one. Remember What's My Line? And that's what we were sort of doing.
Yeah.
Remember that show? It's like.
I think that's before my time.
Yeah, it was. It's like we had three people that said they did the same thing and you had to guess who really was the real person. Okay.
What's my line?
Anyway, but last time I heard What's My Line, it was in a bar picking up a woman. Okay, now.
Bump.
It was a good line.
We have to do our own sound effects.
That's
here.
True. Hey, yeah. Wait, Tom. We got some sound effects. Why don't you give me the lock and load sound effects? Oh, okay. I got a laugh. And the lock and load sound effects because I bombed on the choke. What would that be? You'll get a kick out of this one. Okay, I'm gone. Anyway, that's our Friday show. So,
hence the former departed guests. Exactly. That's how they went.
Yeah.
Let's introduce our guests.
Yeah. So we have a guest, Eric. I think this is a guest that you know and you have you're bringing on the show.
Yeah, we have Ed Gorman with us. Ed, your company Modus. Did I pronounce it right?
That's correct. Modus
right.
Development.
Want to make sure I got that right. And Ed is a local developer here in Phoenix. I think he actually has his hand in a lot of things all over the place, but here in Phoenix, he's working on a lot of green developments and infill developments here in Phoenix. So why don't you just tell us a quick little background about yourself, Ed?
Thanks for having me on the show today. My background is we started Modus Development about 6 years ago with the whole purpose of doing sustainable developments that were both urban and modern and took advantage of the latest technologies. And so several years ago, we built the first LEED for Home certified project in Arizona that was here in Phoenix. And right now we're working on several more in Scottsdale.
All right, very cool. The first LEED for Home. And for people out there that don't know what LEED is, it's Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design. And now it's kind of a big deal. Everyone, a lot of mostly commercial properties are doing it. Some residential properties are doing it. And obviously Ed here is kind of made it a focus of what he's got going on.
That is excellent. We've talked about that before. Remember, Frank, the city of Scottsdale, they had some quite a lengthy talk about that. So, all right, back to you, Eric.
Well, the first thing I wanted to kind of talk about is what kind of got you into this? What made you say 6 years ago that, hey, we're going to come out and we're going to be this green developer here. We're going to take a stand and we're going to work projects this way.
I have a hard time answering that question because people say, what made you think of it or when did you start? Because I still remember back when I was a kid and being involved in bottle drives or thinking about energy. But, you know, I don't see myself as a tree hugger or, you know, that type of person.
Right.
I looked at it from the outside. My background was in both real estate and technology. And I saw sustainability as applying technology to home building. And it was more of a question to myself, why was anybody doing it? And you know, most of the efforts you saw were individuals, it might be an architect who did it on their own home, maybe a contractor, but the efforts were very limited. As you mentioned, quite a bit had been done in commercial buildings, but a lot of that was even mandated in government buildings and things like that, but very little in residential. And I started looking at it and said, why hasn't anybody done it? So we started with a focus and said, well, let's start with urban. That just makes sense. I mean, we didn't do that to push this whole urban renewal movement. It just made sense. It's like, let's go where people are rather than where we think they might be. And this was as the market was heating up as well.
Right.
So we looked at in town, makes sense. seemed like people in town had a greater sense of style for doing a more modern aesthetic.
Definitely.
And then I looked at it from also a business perspective. I'm a businessman. And I looked at it and said, well, if you could save people money, why wouldn't they want it? It was, to me, it was that simple. It wasn't necessarily, I mean, you can work backwards. If you save money and you save oil and you'll end up saving the planet and you save future generations. But I don't necessarily think it works backwards. You have to start with today.
Well, when people are coming to you they're basically the people that are buying these properties, what are they finding, or what are you finding are the number one things they're looking for in terms of the building? And you can look at it either way, whether it's green or whether it's standard amenities. And are they coming to you because these projects are, you know, LEED certified, or you're advertising them for green, or how is that all working out for you?
I think the LEED or the green cements the buying decision for them. Okay. In that the rules in real estate still apply. It's always been location, location, location. And you have to be somewhere they want to be to start with. And we start with that, and they are coming to that neighborhood that we're in because that's where they want to be. Then we work on the aesthetic, because it's almost like buying a car. A lot of people still buy the car that they feel represents what they are, and they mm-hmm. feel like they'll look good in it. Well, you want to look good in your own home. You want to feel comfortable living there. And
yeah, feel good.
Feel good. Mm-hmm. And there's an ego or a self-satisfaction of mm-hmm. people coming to your house saying, yes, I like this home. It looks good. It feels good. It feels like you. So I think traditionally too many green homes looked green.
Yeah, that's something we run into all
it's
the
like
time.
Like wearing a green suit, right?
Yeah. And, yeah. You know, people, you know, their perspective is hay bales and things like that. And
right.
our homes were built with very off-the-shelf and modern materials. I mean, the first project we did had 2x6 wood framing and traditional insulation, but we still got to a LEED rating using all these traditional materials. They weren't exotic solutions.
Yeah, we get people all the time that's the first thing out of their mouth is, we want to do a green or sustainable home, but we don't want it to look like one. You know? So you get that from a lot of people.
And we get people walk through our party and say, well, where is the green? Mm-hmm. Because it wasn't evident. It's very, our chosen.
That's actually a compliment, I would say.
I took it as a compliment. Because
yeah.
it'd be almost like somebody buying a Ferrari and you say, oh, by the way, this Ferrari gets 100 miles to the gallon. You say, well, it doesn't look like it.
Yeah. Right, right.
And same with our houses. They perform very well, but they look as modern as anything you can find in the market.
Well, that's a tribute to your success to be able to do that, you know, to be able to make it feel enjoyable and part of a home and yet still have all these technical qualities to it.
Well, thank you. I mean, at the end of the day, you have to live in it. And,
right.
You know, we'll probably talk more later that things like, you know, the green is a lifestyle, too. It's not necessarily
Absolutely.
A building technique. We'll talk about zero energy and things like that. And it becomes even more of a lifestyle, because you won't get there unless you prescribe to some of the things that you'll have to do to live in that environment.
Are you finding that the longer you've been doing this, and I'm sure your projects, we'll talk about this later, but your projects are probably developing over times and what you're doing with them to kind of be more sustainable. Are you finding that your clientele is getting more sophisticated on their level of sustainability in terms of how it affects their lifestyle and where their home will be?
Yeah, it varies, because green is such a big, nebulous term. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could ask 100 people and you got 100 definitions. You could take, you know, 100 LEED certified professional architects and have them in a room and still have 100 different definitions. So
right.
When your consumers come in, their idea of green, you know, one might be the hay bales, one might be solar panels, another might be energy efficient or, you know, EPA or Energy Star appliances. So the challenge becomes, you have 100 people walk in, they have 100 different perceptions. How can you be all of those?
Right.
So a lot of what we do is you know, trying to meet that demand in the market, but also just providing education. What is green?
Well, let me ask you this. What would be the highest level criteria then? Because you may have some, you know, someone wants to save money here, they want to have a certain look here. It's all green, but I mean, the bottom line is to truly be green, is the highest level perception beyond oneself and to make a good blueprint on the planet for future generations? Would that be at a highest level?
I think at an altruistic level it would be, but that becomes very hard to measure. And that's why we end up having standards like LEED. And
yeah.
What that becomes is just a scorecard. So you have LEED certified, LEED silver, gold, platinum. And that's really just a way to measure it. So if I was to answer your question that way, I'd say, well, then LEED platinum is
gotcha.
the highest. I see where you're going, because you could say, well, how much am I removing the footprint? Am I leaving no footprint on the earth? Am I, you know, burning less carbon? Am I producing power, for example, my solar panels, and not putting anything back in the environment? It becomes very hard to measure, but we're working on ways to do that in our projects. One of the things we're working on that I think is you're able to measure and it's valuable to the consumer is the energy. And because that's dollars and cents, that's out of your pocket, especially in a recession now. People
right.
really care about their power bill or the gas bill.
There's a lot of studies out there that deal with consumers and sustainability, and they, you know, most of them talk about how 6 to 7 out of 10 people want to be green in some aspect or sustainable. But when you look at all these surveys, you hit this number that's like, you know, 95 or 96% of people want lower utility bills. Mm. So it's like that's that aspect of green that if you hit it and you can prove you're saving energy, everybody loves it. Yeah, if you're using less oil and you're helping the environment, these people over here are going to really, really love it. But everybody wants to save energy and get lower utility bills. It's just a fact of life.
Yeah, that's just a criteria. And Frank, I think you know what I was talking about. Frank's
yes.
done neuro-linguistic programming, and
right.
That's what Tony Robbins says. But what I was getting at, and you answered it nicely, is that the higher up criteria you go from, let's say, just saving money, you know, what would that do for you? Well, I might feel good about, you know, contributing to the planet. What would that do for you? I might save, you know, on other generations, the planet itself. And it does get more abstract as it goes up. And or you can go detailed, Frank.
Well, in a way, he is going in that direction.
Yeah.
He approaches it. I'm sorry, I don't mean to speak for you. But my opinion is that you're developing this from a very practical point of view, and it's in terms of the comfort zone of the people and how they react to it. But I think that behind it, there's some higher level considerations.
And you're right. I think it's a hierarchy, though. I think you can't start at the top.
Right.
You got to start
right.
at the bottom and work your way up.
I would
and,
agree. Yeah.
And yeah, I had lunch with somebody yesterday, and he said, "Oh, so you're going to save the whales?" And I said, "Well, indirectly, we will, right? But I can't go out there with the mission
yeah.
of saying my mission is to save the whales."
They
yeah.
look but at if, you with a rather strange.
Right. But if my mission is to help people immediately save on their energy costs, and help them live in a more comfortable building, and we can talk more too that. A LEED building, for example, or a green building, it has also other benefits behind besides energy savings. It's low VOC paints and things that make it a healthier environment. But as we do those things, then you work up the food chain. So if we use less energy, for example, we use less oil. So now we have less dependence on foreign oil. So that moves us up the food chain. And then we get to the point where we're not putting carbon or things into the atmosphere. Well, now we're getting to the part where we are starting to save the whales. So yeah, that's not our mission, but we indirectly, if everybody would do that, if everybody would live in a green home and think that way, yes, we would get to that solution. I don't think we can just automatically do it overnight.
Yeah,
right. And you bring them into your environment. You take them into an environment that's pleasant, that they enjoy, that they understand.
Absolutely.
And they feel comfortable with it.
And it's for everyone. I mean, if you
yes.
have that spectrum from left to right or down, you know, the lowest component to the highest, you're going to eventually hit everyone's criteria. But I agree with you, probably better starting at the lower end for criteria, I would say.
And what we found is the buyers, as much as they're becoming aware of sustainability, they're aware of technology. I mean, as you know, like the Gen Y, I mean, they're practically born with a smartphone in their hand.
Right.
So
it's glued
they
to their
get
ear.
It. So that stuff's there. So we're trying to provide information on sustainability to them. So in our next project, we plan on having the ability for them to monitor their energy consumption on a real-time basis. So this, not looking at your utility bill last month and go, oops, it was $200. You can look at it right this minute and see how much power your TV is using or that your air conditioning is using, and you can make real-time adjustments.
And that leads them to be tremendous spokespeople for your product. When they will start to talk about it, look how much money I save, and they have the readouts in their own home based on their own living standards.
Absolutely. Well, we're seeing people will actually compete. Neighbors yes. will talk about their electric
well, this
bill.
This is what's funny. This story, I've used it once on the show before, but I'm trying to think of a way where maybe you can incorporate this in some of your projects. And it was a university building, I want to say it was for IIT in Chicago, and it was one of their residential towers for their students. And on the first floor where everybody has to come in to get in the elevator, go to their dorm room, they had these huge plasma TVs that are basically look like aquarium. And everyone designs their own fish. So when you come in, you see your fish swimming around. And you design it yourself. Everyone knows who everybody else's fish are. And the fish that gets fat and bloated and swims really slowly are the people who are consuming way more energy in their dorm room than anybody else. The fish that are beautiful and swimming around fast and making all the, you know, big splash, right? Those are the fish that, hey, they're using less energy. They're being more energy efficient. And it's just cool little things like that, you know, because that's a fun way to do it. I saw an example. We talked about this before, too, up in Seattle, or maybe it was Portland. I know they're having trash containers that are clear so everybody can see what you throw out. And are you throwing things out that are, you know, are there paint cans in your garbage, things like that? So that gets a little more, you know, edgy there. But there are kind of some fun, cool ways. And I'm sure in a mixed, or maybe not a mixed use, but in a condo development, because you're doing large projects, but you're also doing some smaller projects too that are really community oriented, where there may be some fun ways to figure some of this out.
Yeah, we're trying to find ways that don't violate their privacy, like the, right, the clear trash cans. Because we thought about putting things on the side of the building that would represent the units on an 8-unit project, for example, and maybe any ranging from green to red. So,
oh, okay,
you
yeah.
know, if it's green, that you're creating energy, and if it's red, you're burning up energy. But we're not sure if that be a.
I know it's one of the
privacy issue. Or not.
Yeah, it could hurt your sales, I guess, to the wrong person.
Because we wanted to, you know, to us, green is something, as you pointed out, is comfortable for everybody. Mm-hmm. That, you know, it is a lifestyle. But we're not trying to narrow the market and say only the greenest of people are going to be attracted to our developments. And that's what we found in our buyer profile, our last project. Our buyer profile was very wide, and it ranged in age from 22 to 55, different backgrounds. So it was interesting on the different things. And as a business person, we try to make sure that we are more than just some narrow spectrum of the market. So right. We want to have a great design, a great location, and be sustainable so we can be a lot of things to a lot of people.
Ed, how does a female respond to the projects that you're working on, the female side of life? I mean, when you're marketing this, maybe you're marketing this a lot to the male thinking of energy efficiency. How do the women react to what you're
now,
doing?
Now, before you answer that, let's take a quick break, okay, because that deserves some contemplation. And when we come back, we will continue our discussion with special guest Ed Gorman, MODIS. And we have, of course, Eric Koss and Frank Clementi here on the Green Roundtable. We'll be right back.
How healthy is your business? Is your business plan helping your bottom line? Do you even have a business plan? Barbara Haggerty of Mind Your Own Business has over 25 years of helping businesses of all kinds and sizes to get them where their owners want them to go. She uses her special wellness check process. It's to assess where your business is now, and then uses her own unique 7-steps business excellence plan to expand and grow your business into something to be proud of. Barbara will take a holistic or a global appreciation view of your company, and that's absolutely going to make a difference to your bottom line. So call now and schedule a wellness check and watch your business grow. 602-750-4518. That's Barbara Haggerty of Mind Your Own Business, 602-750-4518.
Ridenour, Hynten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Hynten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is the Green Roundtable starring Eric Koss and Frank Clemente with special in-studio guest Ed Gorman from Modus. And
Modus operandi.
Yeah, that's right. And you had a good question about women.
Yes. How does he appeal to women? I mean, as far as the product is concerned.
Women love what we build. Now, we don't try to design our stuff with a gender specific, but we have found there's elements of it. And they're not, say, green elements. We found that we try to incorporate things like safety. In an urban setting that we did, we had a gate for your car to come in and garages and gates for pedestrians. And women found that very comforting. At least they were more vocal about it. Men might find it equally as comforting. But as far as our style, very modern, very forward in design, and we think that equally appeals to men as and women.
So over time, as you've been developing these projects, what have any specific issues or just items come up that, gosh, trying to be a more sustainable developer, that maybe some crossroads you had to work your way through as these buildings or projects were going?
The list is endless.
Yeah.
you kind of approach them every day. There's a number of things. I mean, one of the kind of little things that stands in my head, I remember we were doing a project in Phoenix, and one of the lead criteria says if you don't have any wood on the first 8 feet of your building or 6 feet of your building, you don't need to put chemicals in the ground for termites, because it makes sense that they can't get up there.
Yeah.
And so, again, protecting the earth, we're not polluting it by sticking all these chemicals in the ground, yet it's a code requirement that you have to pre-treat for termites.
Mm-hmm.
So here we built our building to LEED certification. We're all ready to go. Residents are ready to move in. City won't give us our certificate of occupancy. They said, where's your termite
certificate?
Certificates. So we had to go inject chemicals into the ground after we were built and LEED certified.
Wow.
Just so we could get so people could move into our buildings.
Wow.
So it's those kind of things that sometimes sustainable elements, LEED certification, others are not necessarily in sync with building codes. So that becomes a problem every step of the way.
It's funny you mention that, because the project we're working on right now, that's one of the things that came back during the city review. And we wrote them a letter and explained everything, that we didn't have any wood in our project, so there was nothing for the termites to eat. So that's how we were getting around it. But they saw that LEED point, and seeing the LEED point is what made them come back and say, well, no, you got to put that in for the city. And then we explained it, and it was okay. But you know, that stuff happens all the time. And the story I always like talking about, there's a library we were working on once, and we were trying to get these LEED points. And I'm imagining you've come up with these types of issues a million times. We got a point for recycled carpet. We took the carpet out and decided to just leave the concrete slab to be more green, and we lost a LEED point. And we were like, hey, wait a second. So those kind of things, I'm guessing, happens to you all the time, going project to project, you know.
It's always new. It's always something different, because it's an education for the buyer and for the contractor or everybody involved in a project. And you know, to that point, that one of the requirements for a LEED point is you have to send half the waste of a construction to the dump that you would normally do on a home. And so you have to have your dumpsters weighed when they go. And so you're very cognizant. You're watching these guys, you know, cut scraps of wood, and you're watching them put things in a dumpster. And you're like, yeah,
I know. You start getting worried when someone takes their McDonald's bag and throws it in, and it's like, hey, wait a second.
Yeah. Well, at least that's recyclable paper. The problem we would have is when you'd put entire pieces of raw material, like an entire cinder block, for example. Well, that could be used again either on our project or another one. So we would tell the subs, take it home, put it in your truck, go use it on the next project.
So how did the subs react to
it? Thought we were crazy at first, but and that's why we found the better you educate them, and we do it now more on the front end. And it's finding process along the way. For example, we found a local artist took a bunch of our scrap wood and made furniture out of it.
Ah,
so it was great. So they just kept raiding our dumpster, which was great.
Are you finding that you start to work with a lot of the same subs, or is it just really depend on the project?
It does depend on the project, but more and more subs are, I think, willing to learn. I think the recession may have helped that too, because everybody wants work. And so you figure if this is the kind of work they have to do, they'll listen. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. They'll get educated. We're finding the same thing with architects and with contractors that several years ago, you know, as we talked about a little earlier, they just want to put a premium on everything because they have to learn it. They don't know it. They want to learn it, but it also takes somebody hiring them, you know, in the architecture world, right? It's having a client that says, yes, I want to be green or I want to be lead, right, and I'm willing to pay for it and hire you to do that. And historically, there just hasn't been a lot of those projects.
Ed, what is the greatest challenge you faced in putting these projects together?
From a sustainability perspective?
From any perspective, personal or business-wise or whatever.
Well, they all seem to kind of go through the same. You have to find the right site, and you have to find the right team. But then sustainability adds other elements to that along each of those criteria as a developer. So now your design needs to be site-specific because you can't orient a building, for example. You can't just take the same plan and use it, whether it faces north, south, east, west.
It's really nice to hear a developer say that.
I know a lot of home builders that won't say that. They take the same plan and use it over and over again.
Yeah.
And so you start with the site, and then as you put your team together, you need a design team that's on board and understands what you're doing and willing to incorporate that, and preferably that has experience doing it. But if they don't and they're willing to learn it and not charge you more for them learning how to do it, because we can also help them learn and bring some knowledge to them.
Yeah,
and then on the team, as you assemble the contractors and the subcontractors, and then it just keeps going every step of the way. It's educating whether it's the city that you're dealing with, because it may not be a little different than the codes they're used to or processes they're used to, and then educating the consumers. And we've done, I think, a real good job on that. We continue to do that. We do a lot with educational things. We brought AIA, the Institute of Architects, in. When Green Build was in town, they brought two buses to our project to tour it and understand, you know, what a green building can look like. Because what we're trying to do, too, is not do one-off. And I think historically most of the green projects you see are a one-off building or a one-off residence. So what we're trying to do is bring it more mainstream. And that's what we're trying to do, project like an 8-unit apartment project. And we're trying to do a 42-unit project and larger after that to show that we can make it more scalable. We can make it more cost-effective. And it doesn't have to be a one-off $500,000 or $1 million home or a government building, and get to the point where it doesn't cost any more to build.
And it's accessible to people.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you've got going on now and where you're going, where you think you're going to be in the future here?
Well, time will only tell the future, but one step at a time. We just are in for permits now for an 8-unit project that we're going to do in Scottsdale. It's an urban infill project at Scottsdale and Kalmbach. It's going to be 8 townhome residences that we'll do for rent to meet the economic situation today. And then we just got city approval for a 42-unit project. It's on the Greenbelt. It's an infill to Thomas and Hayden, and it's called Vivendi, which is Latin for life. And we're bringing life to an old site that was been vacant for 50 years. And it's one of the last pieces of land on the Greenbelt, so it opens up to the Greenbelt
that
runs
that's
through
really
Scottsdale.
Nice.
You know, part of that green living is accessibility to people to walk. There's a bus stop at the end of our driveway. There's the green belt right outside of our back door. So we try to find things like that. And so we're really excited about those. And what we're trying to do is find our next projects that would be able to bring that scale to more people.
Are you open to anybody who may have a concept or a project in mind? Are you open to that? Or is it mostly what you're thinking of or what you're creating?
We talk with a lot of people, whether it's collaborating with somebody else or partnering up, which we're very open to doing.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly today, I think it makes sense. There's a lot of people that have land or they've had concepts that maybe got stalled, and maybe adding our concept and our experience to it can create some success for them. We've met with a number of people. I met somebody yesterday for lunch just talking about their concept, just purely giving them some cues from our experience that can make their sustainable product more successful with no financial interest in it whatsoever. But the idea that if everybody is doing something sustainable, it creates awareness for us. It still helps us. Yeah, it's rising tides kind of thing.
Well, this has been fascinating. And Ed Gorman, thank you so much for being on the Green Roundtable. This has been enlightening. I think we should have you back because this is you're really setting the pace as well as everyone here.
Well, it's leadership. It shows leadership and initiative. I think that's fantastic.
It is. And any contact information you want to give out?
You can contact us on our website, and you can send it to me, Ed, at modusdev. So it's modusdev.com.
Well, thank you so much, Ed Gorman, for being on the Green Roundtable. When we come back from our break, we'll have another guest. And we'll be right back in just a few minutes.
At Beer and Bomb and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birnbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Hi, I'm Paul, and I'm on the spectrum.
And I'm Kim, and I'm an autism specialist.
The second Monday and Tuesday of each month at 3 p.m. on 1010 a.m.
and online at breakradioshow.com, live and archived.
We're here to help you with
Understanding Autism.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Hello, this is Michael Dixon. Internationally acclaimed Metropolitan Opera baritone Dmitri Varostovsky will perform a one-time-only opera gala concert with the Phoenix Opera Orchestra and Chorus Tuesday, January 10th at the Orpheum Theater. We've seen the sensational singer in the Met's live HD broadcasts. Now hear him live in concert January 10th. It'll be the musical event of the season. Get tickets now at the Orpheum box office and at phoenixopera.org.
Weidenauer, Heighton & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Weidenauer, Heighton & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today. 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is the Green Roundtable starring Eric Koss and Frank Clemente. And thank you again to a most incredible guest, very informative, good guy, Ed Gorman from Modus. Guys, that was very enlightening.
Modus Development.
Yes, very, very good. And Eric, you have another very interesting guest on the line right now, Kevin Christensen. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. And Eric, go ahead.
Hey, Kevin, how you doing?
I'm doing great. It's a beautiful, sunny day down here in Hondo, Texas, and I appreciate the opportunity to get online with you guys.
So the bigger question is, not that nobody knows, none of our audience knows what you do yet, but is it a windy day in Texas?
It's a lovely, breezy day, and all of my wind turbines are turning.
There you go. Well, Kevin, why don't you real quickly just tell us a little bit about your company and what you do.
Well, our company is Repower Energy, and the way I got into this business 2.5 years ago is I was looking for a form of renewable energy for my home. And I looked at solar and I looked at wind. And in my particular location, I'm up on a little bit of a hill. We have great breezes and a lot of wind. And I settled on going with a SkyStream wind generator. And got to talking to some friends, and I didn't realize renewable energy was that popular. Before I knew it, I had about five friends that wanted a wind turbine as well. So I flew out to Flagstaff, Arizona, where the factory is that makes the unit. And that company is Southwest Wind Power. And went through all of their dealer training program and came back and put my unit up and ended up putting another 8 or 9 up right away. And now after 2.5 years, I've got 75 units up.
Nice. Very nicely done. Now, one of the questions I always get asked right away when it comes to wind technology is, how much wind do you need?
Sure. It takes about 7 miles an hour to get this thing generating. And all wind turbines are different. Some take more, like the large wind turbine farms that you might see when you're going down the highway. We've got a lot of those wind farms in Texas. Some of those units require about 14 miles an hour because they're just, the props are so big and it takes a lot of wind to turn them.
Could you describe?
The nice thing about our unit is it's a residential wind turbine, and the blades on this unit are only, they only have a 12-foot diameter, blade diameter. So it's real easy to get them turning. They're designed for being very quiet, and they fit into a residential setting quite well.
The so about how, what was the total height you had on there again?
45 feet is what okay. We typically recommend. And if we're in areas where there's large trees and we need to get up a little higher, we have a 70-foot tower. We also have a 55-foot tower.
All right. So if someone's interested in wind technology, how do they decide if they're really – what's the easy, simple way for someone to say, hey, I can or cannot use wind technology in my home or in my place of business?
Well, typically you need an area – that doesn't have a lot of obstructions around it. Large trees are an obstruction, and they tend to slow the wind down. Mm-hmm. Some of our best areas are open country where you might have a field that you're close to. If you look at our website, most of our installations have been done in rural settings. Farms, ranches are very popular. When you get into a city, you get into large buildings, and that tends to slow the wind speed down, which takes away from the effectiveness of a wind turbine. That's why in a city you'll probably see more solar applications. When you get out in the country, you'll see more wind turbine applications.
Okay. Now, I do have a little list here. There's a lot of people out there when you read about wind energy nationally, you hear about some, you know, I want to say it's the Cape Wind Project out on the East Coast. That's one of these big, huge wind farms that they're trying to get done with the Atlantic. And there's every time somebody wants to put up a wind farm somewhere, there's usually a whole other group of people that says, no way, we don't want a wind farm here. And one of the things they bring up always is noise. And how does noise affect most of these wind turbines when we talk about it on a residential scale for a smaller wind turbine?
Well, this unit, the SkyStream wind turbine, has blades that are slightly curved, and they're all designed and engineered for the maximum quietness because it is a residential wind turbine.
So you're putting them next to houses all the time?
Yes.
With no issues?
This unit is designed because 45 feet off the ground. It's not right next to the house. We get it, you know, 50 or 60 feet from a home. And it does have a little hum to it, but it's a lot safer than, you know, nuclear. You can't smell it or see it or...
Yeah, I tried putting a nuclear power plant next in my backyard, and it just didn't work very well.
Yeah, nuclear is a little bit... a little bit hard to see, and it's very quiet, but it's also a deadly killer. But these things are very quiet. The wind turbines, I haven't had any complaints, And matter of fact, our company also owns rental properties, and one of our properties is an RV park, which we have three of the units in. And we never have any complaints from any of the RVers that are in the park.
Kevin, we have a caller on the line that would like to ask you a question or make a comment.
Sure.
Okay.
Hi, Kevin. My name is Jim Delatoso. I'm really interested in what you have to say, but I have a specific question for you. There are neighborhoods of people that want to get together and say, well, we've got all these walls between our houses. Let's take the walls down and enjoy a giant backyard and share our assets and resources. And that's kind of its own little movement of neighborhood redevelopment, share resources. If a neighborhood, let's say 5 or 10 houses, want to get together and create their own shared power, what general kind of costs are there involved? What does it take in order to have, let's say, 5 houses? They're going to put up one unit and then share the power and rewire and do that. What does that take?
Well, I think you're thinking about one of the exceptionally large wind turbines, like you see in a wind farm. Those things have a blade diameter of 300 feet, and it would definitely take care of, you know, a small neighborhood. But you get into those issues where you're having to rewire everything. And the beauty part about this residential unit that we offer is that it ties right into your load center on your home by way of a 20-amp breaker. And so taking the wind power and putting it into your load center on your home, whenever the wind's blowing, it reduces the amount of power you're buying from the utility company.
Yes.
And if there's no wind at all, and we're going to have days where you wake up and there's no wind, you're still connected to the utility grid. Not, I have calls every day. People say, well, I just got my electric bill and I want to get away from the utility company. But that is really the most economical way to get your energy right now is from a utility company and the grid. But by offsetting it, making your own power, whether it be with solar or with wind, you can reduce the amount you're buying from the utility company.
Yes.
So to answer your question, it would be very, very expensive to buy one of the extremely large units to take care of 5 or 10 or even 20 homes, because everything would have to be rewired and engineered for that.
Yes.
But, Kevin, there's a possibility that if you started a development with that in mind, the cost might be mitigated or reduced.
Exactly. And, you know, from the ground level, designing it, engineering it, and putting it in an area where it had the wind resource would be an excellent idea.
Mm-hmm.
You could also add the solar on every one of the rooftops, and you could probably get it to where you're not buying hardly any electricity at all.
And you're probably giving it back to the grid system.
Yep.
So if you're doing a development, let's say you're doing 20 homes, and it's around, instead of around a golf course, it's around a shared farm. And there is some movement in that in a national level. You read about it in Wall Street Journal and others every now and then. So is it realistic then to start from the ground up and put a central wind energy center, or to build each individual home with wind on the home?
I would think build each individual home as energy efficient as you possibly can, so that each person living as conservatively as they could and energy efficient would reap the benefits of making their own electricity with wind or solar.
Right. So in the economies of scale, the home size maybe is more bang for the buck, dollar for dollar, cost of installation and your available power than trying to put up a large system and distribute the power to that neighborhood.
That's correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What is the sweet spot, so to say, on the cost and kilowatts or megawatts of a unit, the most efficient size?
This unit produces 2.4 kW per hour.
Mm-hmm. And I would say for a 1,500 square foot home, it's going to take care of 40 to 90% of your energy needs.
Yeah.
If you mix that with a little application of solar on the roof, you're probably going to take care of most of the electrical requirements for that home.
What does the bank think about building that into the construction cost of the home?
We haven't had that request yet. Most of what we, most of our customers are farmers, ranchers, people that live just outside the city. They may have a weekend home or a vacation home, and we work with them. But I haven't worked with a developer yet.
Yeah, and that's probably going to be a question, too, that's going to change on a per-lender basis, too, because all the lenders are coming out with are slowly coming out with their own versions of these green mortgages and things like that and green construction loans where sometimes you can get a little more money in there for some sustainable development, but it's really a bank-by-bank basis.
Exactly.
Okay.
So, Kevin, I was curious with, you know, the obvious thing about solar is, hey, you know, the sun's only up half the day. With wind, you're going 24/7. Are people incorporating battery backup systems much with the wind turbines you're doing to try to capture some of the energy? Or is it still seems like the most bang for your buck is try to tie into the grid and do a net metering?
Yeah, net metering is by far the most energy efficient way to go about it. There's two things that out of all the wind turbines I've installed, we have all over 75 installations. I haven't done a battery backup system on any of them. We've done grid tie on all of them where we tie directly into the load center and do the net metering. And the main reason is that batteries are very expensive. You know, a battery bank could cost as much as the wind turbine itself. And then if you look at the lifespan of that battery pack, it's only good for 7 to 10 years on average. So every 7 to 10 years, you're starting over and putting new batteries in. Now, they are making some breakthroughs in battery design, which in the future I think will, you know, we might see some homes that are completely run off batteries in the future. But right at this moment, it's better to do the grid tie installation.
Jim, do you have any further questions? Hello?
I think we lost Jim.
We lost Jim.
Okay, back to Eric.
And then the other thing I get a lot about wind is birds. Now, you've got a smaller system. You know, you don't have one of these 300 monsters. How do birds, you know, come into play with the systems you usually install?
We haven't experienced any problems with the SkyStream because it's a smaller diameter. It's only 12 feet in diameter. And it turns at a higher rate of RPM. I would think that, you know, if a bird is flying at night, you know, it could possibly fly into it, but it's not a big problem.
Okay. And then last but not least, there's a lot of people, again, I'm assuming, and you'll have to educate me on this, that it's an issue on the larger wind turbines, but this shadow or flicker effect that you hear about being in the shadow of wind turbines, is that an issue with the smaller wind turbines you're using?
It could be if you were in a residential area, but once again, we recommend putting it in a application where you have 1 or 2 acres. Maybe you're outside the city or you're on a large enough property where you're not experiencing that flicker on your neighbors, because it's just like anything. If you have something that's really neat on your property and your neighbor doesn't have it, he's probably not going to like the fact that you have a wind turbine. And so he's going to complain about it. But, you know, we have never had a complaint about flickering.
Okay.
Do you mind explaining flickering to our audience who may not know what it is? What does that mean?
It's like a shadow. The sun goes through the blades, and it creates a little bit of a flicker shadow that could fall on, say, if you were real close in a residential neighborhood and somebody's got a big picture window, all of a sudden they have a shadow. And it's only going to be for a few minutes as the sun passes each day, mm-hmm. the blades of the wind turbine. But once again, I've never had a complaint from a flicker.
Okay.
From these shadows of the wind turbine.
Yeah, I saw there's a new piece of technology out now that if for areas where you may be in the shadow of a wind turbine or you want to put one, they've developed some sort of technology that tracks the sun, tracks your windmill shadow, and it knows when the shadow when there is a shadow and when the shadow's in an area where it could cause a disturbance with the flicker, and then it lets the windmill know, okay, even though you could be producing energy for the next 15 minutes, we're just going to slow you way down. And then once the shadow moves or it gets out of that quote-unquote danger area, it speeds right back up again and it'll roll on through. But again, I think that's something with the really big wind turbines.
That's exactly right. The really large units, they're like 450 feet tall. And that can cast a pretty long shadow. Whereas when you're only going 45 feet tall with a typical SkyStream wind turbine, you're not casting that big of a shadow, so it's not going to be a big problem.
Kevin, I might have missed this, but what do the units sell for, and how are they purchased?
Well, I wish we could publish one price fits all, but it doesn't work that way because we have to put a large foundation in the ground to hold the tower up. See, this tower doesn't have any wires, and in the old days, they used to put a tower up, and they had these long wires that went down to the ground. And with the new technology, we go in and drill a deep pier into the ground, 10 to 12 feet, and it's 36 inches in diameter. So you have a 3 feet diameter piece of concrete in your yard, and that's what holds up the tower. And it's all engineered, designed to hold the tower up. And so the type of soil can vary from site to site, whether we're in solid rock or granite versus sand or soft dirt can affect the price. But typically, you're looking at around $19,000 or $20,000 for a turnkey installation.
Now, Kevin Christensen, we are out of time, but thank you so much for calling in. Do you have any contact information if people want to get in touch with you?
Yeah, if anybody wants to Google me under Repower Energy, I'd be happy to get back to them and send them any information. Repower Energy, Hondo, Texas.
Well, thank you so much, Kevin Christensen. We'll have you on again. Very interesting. Thank you so much. And this is the Green Roundtable contact information, Eric.
You can go to our website at costdb.com. That's K-O-S-S, D as in design, D as in build.com.
And Frank?
You can send me an email to frank3773@q.com.
Thank you so much, guys. We'll see you for our January 3rd show. And what did you say it was?
Oh, we're going to have a top 10 green New Year's resolution.
Excellent. And see everyone tomorrow. Breakthrough Sports. Some really exciting sports action. Everyone have a great night. See you tomorrow.